The Politics, Politics, Politics podcast is brought to you, as always, by patreon.com/JURY. Support the show and get two bonus podcasts every single week by heading on over there right now. patreon.com/JURY. Also, do you want a collection of the stories I'm paying attention to for the show with my commentary in your email inbox every weekday? Sign up at tinyletter.com/JustinRobertYoung for the free PX3 daily email. But enough of talking about how we support the show. What do you say we just do the damn thing?
Politics, 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 politics.
Oh, as if we never left, my friend. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Politics, Politics, Politics show. My name is Justin Robert Young. Hi, everybody. Did I miss anything? Cue laugh track. Holy shit. What a week. What a fucking week. Every time I leave the country, every goddamn time I leave the country, all fucking hell breaks loose. Like, there's literally just never a time. There is never a dull moment when I leave. It's just the worst. Just the worst. I remind you, the last time I left the country was when I was going on vacation to England. And it was there, in Edinburgh, Scotland, in my Airbnb. I woke up because I sensed a disturbance in the force. And lo and behold, when I opened up my laptop, did I see Donald Trump on tape saying that you can grab them in the pussy, because when they're a star, they let you do it. And I thought, well, fuck, man, if there's ever going to be a time, if there's ever going to be a time that I will be safely able to leave the country, it's going to be during the Christmas and New Year's holiday. I mean, nothing ever happens. People are out there with their families. There's a lot of stuff, right? There's a lot of reasons to believe that this is a very, very, very safe news hole that I can make a vacation in. And you want to know what? For a lot of it, I was right. I was right. Nothing was happening. Everybody was out. And then, it started with the Fire and Fury book. Ah, the wolf. The wolf of DC decides to write this book, Fire and Fury. He, being a prolific writer and magazine commentator, leaks it to all the appropriate outlets. It is there that we begin to feel the backlash. That backlash is mostly, aside from the author himself, directed at one man, Steve Bannon. Steve Bannon. Steve Bannon apparently talked to Mr. Wolf extensively and is quoted as saying that the Donald Trump Jr. meeting with the Russians was treasonous shit. So, here's the problem. The problem is that I'm not here to cover it because everything breaks down immediately after that. Everything totally just goes from 0 to 60. All of a sudden, now Steve Bannon is getting eviscerated by Trump in the White House. These two were simpatico. Folks, they could not have been more on the same page. Steve Bannon was the ideological embodiment of the populist Trump message. He was the chief strategist, the advisor, somebody that was categorized by the press as the real president. Now, sure, he had left the White House. It was something that seemed kind of appropriate for Steve Bannon. I mean, really, who could look at Steve Bannon as a staffer? No. What he really wanted to do was the ability to do what he had done before he got into the Trump orbit, which is to professionally put a fist up Mitch McConnell's butt. But I'll tell you what, if there is one man whose smile could shine so bright it could be seen from space, it's gotta be that turtle-looking motherfucker, Mitch McConnell. Because the devolution of Steve Bannon has been so fast and so furious, Paul Walker smiles from heaven when he thinks about it. Let's go ahead and recount the buffet of L's that Steve Bannon has taken over the past 3 months. And let's also chart his let's chart his high mark. The high mark of Steve Bannon was him meeting with the Mercers and saying, we are going to launch a season of war against the Republican establishment. We are going to run in every contest, regardless of who's up in 2018. We're going to run against Republicans in the primaries. We're going to run against Democrats if they're sitting. We are going to make sure that the Trump agenda of America First is heard. And this does not devolve into yet another cookie cutter establishment presidency. And Bannon was preaching the good word. This is the high watermark of Steve Bannon. He had it better than when he was in the White House. He had all of the influence and none of the consequence. Dude's taken huge high-profile speaking gigs around the world so we can tell the tale of the bold American populist. Oh, I'm sure Steve Bannon is somewhere. He's probably homeless because he used to live in the Breitbart offices in D.C. Now he's out at Breitbart as well. I'm sure that if he thinks about that moment, why he'd like to get it illustrated and put on a piece of china, he'd put it in a finely decorated curio cabinet, expertly sculpted on the edges. And there would be him in 2017, ascendant, radiant with power. For there are three legs to the Bannon stool, my friend. The first is Bannon's mind, his concept of populism, the zeitgeist that he preternaturally tapped into. The second is his money, his connection to the Mercers and the blank check for him to do whatever he wanted. Hey, can you fund a movie? Sure. Hey, can you give me my own analytics firm? Absolutely. Hey, can we write books that are analytically driven and then partner with different media outlets so we can create a narrative about whatever we want? Without a ding-dong diddly doubt. What about Breitbart? Sure. What about this Milo kid? Absolutely. You keep putting out these ideas, we keep signing the checks. And the third, of course, is his political connection. He's the man that helped, was a key. He was there at the finish line for the most unlikely presidential election in history. And then, folks, death for Steve Bannon rode in on a horse named Sassy. Bannon-backed Roy Moore against the Trump-backed Luther Strange. Roy Moore won the primary, lost the general. So now, all of a sudden, Steve Bannon's mind for the populace, not so much. Not so much. And that apparently kind of hurt his standing with the Mercers, which leaves the money in doubt. And now this book comes out and he's talking shit about Don Jr. See, Steve Bannon must have thought that the White House was the Olive Garden. When you're here, your family. So he thought he could, you know, take some shots at his fellow brothers. Brothers don't shake hands. Brothers hug. No. No. No, no. No, no. No, no, no. No, no, no. That was the last straw. Donald Trump wanted no part of that shit. And all of a sudden, his access to the White House is now taken away. This also makes the worst enemy he could possibly make. And that is Donald Trump himself. Because there had always been this bristling. If you remember, Donald Trump was not a fan of Time Magazine calling Steve Bannon the real president. And now, and we're going to get to this in the Fire and Fury book. Now that it's very clear that the first year of the Trump presidency was something akin to gang warfare, where various factions would knife each other to see who would ultimately have power, those that were anti-Bannon, well, them motherfuckers won. Because when Bannon isn't the Oracle at Delphi, and he ain't got the same hold on his donors, and he ain't got the connection to power, well, shit. Frank Sinatra sang it, and that's life. And we're going to fudge some of the months, but he was secret president in August. Sloppy Steve in January. And when the war came hard. Trump apparently started working the phones immediately. He called literally anybody that had a shared orbit with him and Steve Bannon and says, hey, who you got, dog? The sitting president of the United States or the motherfucker who wears three shirts and can't moisturize? You, Mr. President, was apparently the universal refrain, according to the reporting at Axios and Mike Allen. And then the final indignity. That comes yesterday. Breitbart, the machine in which Bannon brought to new heights. The machine that was to lead a season of war. The machine that without it, there is a question on whether or not the ascendancy of Donald Trump could have been what it was in such a crowded field. Well, there is no joy in Bannonville because Sloppy Steve has been tossed out. The Mercers, who sit on the board, gave Bannon the heave-ho. Bannon tried to apologize, but it was too little, too late. He said, listen, Donald Trump is really, really a great guy. I love him. I've been talking about how he's the most amazing person ever. I wasn't really shitting on Don Jr. I was shitting on Paul Manafort. But folks, dear listeners to this show, say it with me because we can add another log to this raging fire. I want to see it in the chat. Steve Bannon has been fired. Fired. Fired from his dream job. That man's got to be homeless now. I mean, like, where the fuck is he? He apparently was living at the Breitbart Embassy, quote unquote, in Washington, D.C. What an indignity. If he gets fired from Breitbart, it also, they're your landlord. Also, pack your shit. We got your room at the Howard Johnson. Just let us know when you find a place where you can land on your feet. Is this the last we've seen of Steve Bannon? It certainly is the last that we've seen of him at that level. He'll surely kick around. But in fact, that wouldn't shock me if he winds up back in the Trump orbit at some point. But he will never be what he was. I remember there was a quote when Steve Bannon, the season of war was just kind of ramping up, that Steve Bannon by 2018 would be a forgotten afterthought. And tell you what, you can see it now. His picture, like Back to the Future, slowly fading away. Oh, it's sad to see, too, in the comment section of Breitbart, on the_Donald. These were the Bannonites. Now, let's fuck off, Sloppy Steve. He's very obviously an alcoholic. As TVC Gun says in our Twitch chat, at least he's got his health. But let's take a look at the other side of this coin. For the man that cast the sentence must swing the sword, and that man is Donald Trump. He is the one that cast out Sloppy Steve into the hinterlands. But the question is now, with Bannon not only out of the White House, but also out at Breitbart, does Breitbart's tone change? Are they a little less draconian than they were before about holding Trump's feet to the fire on some of his America First promises? And does Trump's direction change any? Well, it's obviously early in the game, but we have two signs that, yes, this might be a slightly different Trump presidency than it was when Steve Bannon was mucking about. And here's the first. Donald Trump negotiated with Congress live on the internet yesterday. And in that, he said that he wants to sign a bill of love for immigrants. Here's his quote. "You folks are going to have to come up with a solution," Trump told 25 lawmakers in a remarkable televised negotiation at the White House. "And if you do, I'm going to sign that solution." Basically, he is saying out on Front Street that as long as he gets funding for a wall, he will sign a DACA agreement. Now, this is likely something that we are basically, there's a budget deadline in January. There's no way they're going to get it done by then. So they're going to have to kick that can down the road, most likely. And Trump seems conciliatory on DACA. Remember, Bannon was one of the loudest voices that said that he had to cancel DACA. DACA was not something that could ever happen. It was giving away the moral position on immigration. Immigration is immigration is immigration. If you're here illegally, you should be out of here. And then meanwhile, Trump also is announced that he's going to Davos. What? Davos. Game of Thrones? Davos. The guy who made the Daleks? Davos. Ah, yes. It is that yearly gathering that Breitbart, specifically under Bannon's tutelage, believed was ground zero for globalism. What is Trump doing there? He didn't go last year. Last year, he was told, of course, it is a gathering where world leaders are not only appreciated, but expected. But he's going to be there now. You know, it reminded me of when I was a younger man. I had a girlfriend, a man. She said she hated the Arcade Fire. And then all of a sudden we broke up. And all she did was post Arcade Fire lyrics on her Facebook for a solid year. You know, I'm sure when Trump and Bannon were talking to each other, he was like, hey, I hate Davos. Davos is stupid. Globalism stinks. And now, oh, but days after the breakup, book my plane ticket, baby. Trump's going to be taking pictures next to George Soros, posting it on his IG. Here's the story from the Washington Post, where democracy is dying in darkness. It was quite the neoliberal day on Tuesday for President Trump. The New York Times broke the story that the president was going to be hobnobbing with the global elites he bashed during his presidential campaign. In short, Trump is going to Davos, darling. The president welcomes opportunities to advance his America First agenda with the world leaders, says his press secretary, Ms. Sanders. At this year's World Economic Forum, the president looks forward to promoting his policies to strengthen American businesses, American industries, and American workers. This is kind of the Trump that I sort of always expected, to be honest with you. I expected him to be a little bit more wiggly on his America First promises than he was portraying himself. Also, wait, somebody pointed, Pops in Recline in the Twitch chat says that Sarah Sanders, it is Miss Sanders. Isn't it Mrs. Sanders? Isn't she married? Or did she get divorced? Because she has kids, right? Is Sarah... All right, here we go. Digression time. Is Sarah Huckabee Sanders married? Yeah. They've been married since 2010. When the fuck is it Miss? Should be Mrs., right? Somebody fucked up. Somebody fucked up. We are fact-checking the copy editors. Fact-checking the copy editors of the New York Times. Gunshots. All right. Let's get back. Okay, so I've expected Donald Trump to be a little bit more wiggly on some of his promises, and ultimately, I don't know how much it will matter. as long as the economy is humming by 2020, Donald Trump should be okay if he can get the wall built. The wall and jobs. That's it. That's all he really, like, ultimately needs to worry about. A lot of the other stuff, like, he can give on DACA. Nobody really gives a shit about DACA. Like, immigration hardliners, ultimately, I think, will take that deal. Now, of course, there's, like, fucking shit stirrers like Ann Coulter, who are like, yeah, deport the DACA people first, and then we'll get to MS-13. Like, she's there for the lulz. I think in reality, the wall, as fucking stupid and ineffectual as I think it really is enough that you can, like, that makes you unimpeachable for immigration stuff going forward. And by the way, I think Big Jim in the Twitch chat points it out, and I agree, it's jobs, then immigration. If everybody's getting paid, nobody really gives a fuck how many people are in here using up, you know, government resources illegally. Nobody. If people are not getting paid, oh shit, does that become important? All right. Speaking of Fire and Fury, the book by Michael Wolff, something that a lot of people hit me up with in our Discord or on Twitter as this book came out and became a international phenomenon immediately, was how should we read this? How should we process this book? It says right there in the foreword that he can't be sure that anything anyone told him was true. So, there's that. A lot of the stuff that's in there has kind of already been sort of proven fairly demonstrably false. Like, he's got Donald Trump saying he doesn't know who John Boehner is when he's tweeted about John Boehner and gone golfing with John Boehner publicly. Well, here we go. Allow me to let you guys know, all of the dear listeners here to the Politics, Politics, Politics program, how you should process this book, how you should read it. I'm going to ask everybody here in the audience, if you're live, watching live, then let me know in the chat room if you are listening to this after the fact or watching this on YouTube, youtube.com/Justin Robert Young. Do you know what a slam book is? Do you know what a slam book is? I'm curious on whether or not this is outdated. Talked about this on the Jury podcast this week, but I'm a little sensitive about my age right now, because I was singing karaoke in Japan, and a bunch of young women were unaware of many of the songs I was picking, and I thought I was picking cool songs. We're getting a lot of no's here, so allow me to tell you. In fact, you want to know what? Let's go ahead and bring up the Wikipedia definition of a slam book. A slam book is a notebook, commonly a spiral-bound notebook, which is passed among children and teenagers. The keeper of the book starts by posting a question, which may be on any subject, and the book is then passed around for each contributor to fill in their own answer to the question. Slam books are also a source of bullying between students, where students lived in fear of the biting comments written anonymously under their names on the order of what today might be a tweet or Facebook comment. A slam book containing cruel comments was featured in episode 320, Kids Can Be Cruel, the 1980s television show, The Facts of Life. Effectively, a slam book is a way for people to talk shit anonymously about other people. So, for example, a slam book example would be you just write a bunch of questions. What's your favorite class? What's your least favorite? Your favorite teacher? Least favorite teacher? Who's the biggest slut? Who's the best person ever? Who's got herpes? Yada, yada, yada. And then you pass it around. Everybody anonymously fills in what they think. Fire and Fury is an adult slam book. In that, this guy, Michael Wolff, who's a fantastic writer and has really made his bones telling the rhapsodic tale of the New York media. A bunch of people talk shit to this guy. And they talk shit about it. And that's it. Did he go check to see whether or not any of it was true or not? No. Because what matters to him is that he accurately captures a bunch of people talking shit to each other. It's just that simple. So when folks are like, hey, a lot of this seems incorrect or conflicted with other shit in the book, the answer to that is doy. Because this is a collection of people knifing each other and their boss publicly or privately. There's a lot of stuff that is attributed to people's names, but the rest of it is not. So if you wonder how he can say with confidence that Donald Trump did X, Y, or Z in the privacy of his own room, or, as I've already read in the first quarter of this book that I am through, that Rupert Murdoch hung up the phone, rolled his eyes, and called Donald Trump a fucking idiot, it's because somebody told him that privately, and he has not used their name for attribution, instead taking it upon himself to create the world. Does this open up the possibility for Michael Wolff to be a total fabulist and create out of whole cloth elements of this story? Yes. Is it the point that we should be holding this to the standard that we would hold, let's say, a Bob Woodward book about the White House, which is probably sure to come at some point? No. I would expect that a Bob Woodward book would be reported, because Bob Woodward is a reporter. Michael Wolff on the Colbert Report, the Late Show with Stephen Colbert, was very clear to say what I thought was the operative way to understand Fire and Fury. I am not a reporter. I'm a writer. His job is to string gossip together so it's well written and you have a sense of what went on. When you are reporting, you are there to stick to the facts. Sometimes, often in a way that removes you from the emotional ground zero of the subjects that you're talking about. Fire and Fury is the opposite. It's supposed to be evocative of this chaotic, backbiting orgy of backstabbing. I'm enjoying it quite a bit right now. But I would caution folks to not take much of this very literally. All right. We are already running a little late, so let's go ahead and get a quick Wave Watch. Two big announcements over the past 48 hours. Number one, Daryl Issa of Southern California, representative from Southern California, who had one of the toughest races in 2018, is now out. He will not run for re-election. That is a very purple district. And what will surely be, if not the most interesting, certainly the most odious race of the 2018 campaign, is that for Jeff Flake's seat in Arizona. Kelly Ward is already running, and now joining her on the Republican side is Sheriff Joe. Yes, Sheriff Joe Arpaio, the former Maricopa, Arizona sheriff, who took it upon himself to be the Inspector Clouseau for where Barack Obama fell out of a vagina. He is also now running for Senate after he could not win his job back as sheriff. You smell it? Oh, it's campaign season, baby. Oh, yes, yes. Waft it towards you. Oh, what is that? Oh, Michelle Bachmann is looking to run for Al Franken's seat. Oh, yes. That's some rich campaign. Oh. Guys, you have no idea how excited I am for 2018. I'm just so excited. Finally, red meat yet again. We had some good special elections in 2017, but folks, that was just methadone. Now let's break out the H. Summon the horse and name it Sassy. Now, there is one more story. There is one more story that we cannot talk. We cannot do a politics, politics, politics episode without talking about. Oh, y'all know. Because if 2018 is going to be this good, well, 2020 has to be the best. And we took a gigantic step toward that this Sunday. Yes, all the Hollywood elites gathered to give each other awards yet again. And they did their second favorite thing, too, which is to stand up on a soapbox and proclaim the moral North Star of the country and how they were a part of it. And who led the way? Moses-like with her tablets, talking about how no more shall go forth because time's up on the evils of this country. Yes, it was Oprah stoking serious. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, serious discussion on whether or not Oprah should run for president. I kind of always just thought Oprah should be president was something you said because we all like Oprah. But apparently people are serious. This blows my mind. I thought, that to me is like you saying, oh, Queen Beyonce. Oh, yes, I love her music. No. I want to set up a constitutional monarchy and install Beyoncé Knowles into that place. We should make her the literal queen. But Oprah's serious. She's so serious. that there is now proof on how she would stand. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, I want to welcome you for the first time in 2018. This is a very speculative edition of the
Get on the floor if you got that booty.
Dance. All right. Pole Dance 4. January 10th, 2018. 1,000 likely voters, a 3% margin of error, asking respondents who they would prefer to be president in 2018. Coming up first to the stage, folks, he's the sitting president of the United States of America. Let's get a real big round of applause with 38% for Donald Trump. But your headliner, the unmarried black woman who captured America's hearts with her stirring speech about misogyny's time of demise. Ladies and gentlemen, with 48%, it's Oprah! And you have a speculative advantage. And you have a speculative advantage. You all have speculative advantages. Folks, that is a 10-point spread for Queen O herself, Oprah. Real quick, let's do a winners and losers. I mentioned this in the email newsletter, or in the politics daily newsletter. Again, sign up for that, tinyletter.com/JustinRobertYoung. For those of you who are patrons, this is basically that Patreon the stuff that I was sending out every day, but now it's in email form, so it's easier for people to spread around, and I think it's just a better format for it. If Oprah runs, it is a really bad sign for three people if they want to run for president as well: Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, and Kirsten Gillibrand. They want that. We are strong women in the age of pussy hats, hashtag resistance kind of energy. It's going to be hard for them to do it when a far more famous woman is running. And, you know, aside from Kamala Harris, a black woman just in the Democratic circles, it would be very bad for them. It is no surprise that Elizabeth Warren has kind of tossed side eye to this idea. It would be bad. That being said, Oprah is not just another celebrity who wants to run for office. If Oprah wanted to run, she would be a serious candidate. If you look at the way that she polls with people, it is more akin to a religious figure than it is a television personality. There are voters throughout middle America who would not vote for a Democrat, who would not vote for a black person, who would not vote for a woman, that would vote for Oprah, because she's none of those. She's Oprah. That being said, does Oprah want to campaign? It's a question. It's a very, very interesting question. Let's go ahead and get into But Your Emails. You can go ahead and send me any feedback you have on the show or politics in general to theyoungamerican.com. Greg writes, You're never allowed to go on vacation again. Every time you do, shit goes nuts. Today alone was totally insane. I hope you're having fun with your wife, and I hope it was worth it. This is why it pays to be a $3 supporter on Patreon. Even while I was in Japan and Hong Kong flying back, I did my extra episodes of the podcast. So you got my reactions as everything was happening. If you were a $3 subscriber, just saying, membership has its privileges. Bob writes, I've been thinking for a while about the idea of projected graffiti, rude or unwanted images projected on the sides of buildings, especially as the technology to do this becomes smaller and cheaper. The fuck Trump slogans on the side of the stadium at last week's football game is a perfect example. Is it vandalism? Are there laws against it? Will new laws be passed? Or will this sort of thing become more common? You know, in general, vandalism laws are kind of tied to the costs it would take to repair it. So if it doesn't have any kind of cost to repair it, I would find it interesting to see where the threshold for punishment. It is illegal in some places, as Stoic Squirrel is pointing out here in the Twitch chat. However, I don't think, you know, it's low stakes stuff at this point. You know, aside from the fact that now that we have social media, someone can just take a picture and now it lives there forever. You know, people can say nasty shit about whoever they want, project it on a thing, then it goes away. It's fine. Trench writes about our presidential PUBG episode last week. By the way, thank you to all everybody who had such great feedback on that. I loved doing it with John, and hopefully we get this thing published very, very soon. Loved the presidential PUBG episode, and I mostly agree with you. However, I think the winner would have been George H.W. Bush. One thing about him that wasn't mentioned is that he was the former director of the CIA. I think that with that knowledge, he could have run a major stealth campaign until it came down between him and Teddy Roosevelt. Roosevelt would be holed up in a building, waiting for the enemy to show himself outside, but it would be already too late, as the last thing Roosevelt would hear before his demise would be, "Did I ever tell you who my favorite magician is?" Gabriel writes, if the presidents in the PUBG have only whatever is on them at Inauguration Day, what if every president post-Reagan, or possibly even post-Kennedy, was wearing body armor of some kind? Wouldn't this change the dynamic of battle if we knew some president could absorb more damage than others? Also, why would they have to parachute into the arena? If through some weird magic, every U.S. president in history could assemble in one arena across space and time, why not just have them automatically spawn somewhere on the ground? Just a thought. Thanks for the great show. Well, we had them parachute in because that's what you do in PUBG. If you've never played the game, it begins with you in a plane, and then you choose where you are landing in the game zone. So you see a topographical map of the game zone, and you parachute in like that. So you can generally try to put yourself near roads, for example, or around clusters and cities, some of the areas that might have more goodies for you to stack up. So that's why we had them parachute in, so it would be true to the game. We did think about the body armor thing. We just weren't able to find any kind of solid documentation on when presidents wearing flak jackets during inauguration started. There were a lot of there's a lot of reporting on Donald Trump and Barack Obama wearing bulletproof clothing, but not necessarily who was wearing a flak jacket. So that's why we didn't include it in there, but we did think about it. So great instinct on that, Gabriel. There is more about all that in the write-up, which hopefully I want to get this thing up as soon as possible. We're talking to people about getting it on a website and everything. So, you know, holidays come into it. People are slow to get back into the game. All right. That about brings us to the end of this edition of the illustrious Politics, Politics, Politics podcast. I want to thank everybody for watching us live on Twitch, twitch.tv/JustinRYoung. Join me 5 days a week, man. I'm doing emails and I am doing a live politics chat talking just about the news of the day. So if you're unfamiliar with what Twitch is, allow me to educate you real quick. It is just a great live streaming service. Do yourself a favor. Download the Twitch app. It is available on Google, Apple, everywhere that you can find it, on your mobile, right? Go ahead and find Justin R. Young. Follow me and make sure you sign up for alerts. And whenever I go live, if you are at a job where you can watch something out of the corner of your eye, you can set it up there, or you can set it up for audio only and listen to me live, audio only. Every time I am taking questions from the chat, we're having a fantastic time. Again, twitch.tv/JustinRYoung. You can email me at any time, theyoungamerican@gmail.com. Music has been provided by Valesco and Trop Killers, and you can follow me at JustinRYoung everywhere. Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter. Download archived episodes of this show at BonerWars.com. Folks, 2018. 2018's our year. Can you feel it? I can. Just remember, some shows talk about politics. Other shows talk about politics. Others talk about politics. But this is the only motherfucking show that talks about all three. I will see you next week.
Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.